I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, down to the wire. On the eve of the election, Vice President Harris and former President Trump fill their schedules with a full day of campaigning. Inside the numbers, we take a look at the latest polling data and what it could mean for control of the White House and Capitol Hill. The floods and mud. And frustration as the King of Spain visits the epicenter of the Catholic country's deadly disaster. Plus, the heart of our faith. Pope Francis tells the faithful why loving God and those around us is an essential part of being a Christian. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Charles Borromeo. Our top story tonight, after months of campaigning, the 2024 race for the White House between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris is about to conclude. While tens of millions of Americans cast early ballots, Election Day is officially just hours away. And we begin our team coverage with Owen Jensen, who is keeping an eye on Vice President Kamala Harris and her busy day in Pennsylvania. Owen joins us now. Owen.
Hi, Tracy. Good evening to you. This was also a race, you'll recall, that saw President Joe Biden drop out after a very unsteady debate performance earlier this summer. Former President Donald Trump nearly assassinated. Poll after poll revealing a very tight contest. And a Democratic candidate, Kamala Harris, who once had low favorability numbers, suddenly running for the top job with a chance to win.
In a last-minute effort to win more votes in the all-important state of Pennsylvania, Vice President Kamala Harris visiting Scranton for what her campaign calls a canvas kickoff.
Are we ready to do this? We're ready to get out the vote? We're ready to win? All right. Okay.
Pennsylvania's 19 electoral votes offer the largest prize among the states expected to determine the Electoral College outcome. Meanwhile, in La Crosse, Wisconsin, the man running to be Vice President of the United States on the Democratic ticket, Governor Tim Walz, tells supporters they can elect a new generation of leadership and a new way forward.
I know there's a lot of anxiety, but the decisions that are made over the next 24, 36 hours when those polls close will shape not just the next 4 years, they will shape the coming generations.
Over the weekend, Vice President Harris making one last campaign pitch to Michigan voters, saying people cannot sit this election out.
Ready? In one of the most consequential elections of our lifetime, and we have momentum. It is on our side. Can you feel it?
Harris will be watching the results come in from her alma mater, Howard University, in Washington, D.C., tomorrow night. Meanwhile, about 77 million Americans have already voted. Harris vying to become the first woman, first black woman, and first person of South Asian descent to reach the Oval Office. The 60-year-old pitching herself as a generational change while emphasizing her support for abortion, promising to codify Roe v. Wade and making abortion more accessible across the nation, with pro-lifers warning there'd be few, if any, restrictions.
Also, Harris's campaign says the vice president will hold rallies in Allentown, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia tonight. The final late-night event in Philly includes remarks from celebrities Lady Gaga and Oprah Winfrey. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Former President Donald Trump and his running mate, Senator J.D. Vance, were also on the campaign trail in several key battleground states. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with more on Election Eve from West Palm Beach, Florida. Eric.
Yes, good evening, Tracy, from a very windy and muggy West Palm Beach, Florida, and where there's something else in the air, that's anticipation as the 2024 election comes winding down. Now, behind me is Mar-a-Lago, and that is where we've been told that the former president, Donald Trump, along with his running mate, J.D. Vance, will be watching the numbers come in tomorrow night with their families. They're going to be having a private party there, and then they're going to be heading about 2.5 miles away. That's over at the convention Center, the West Palm Beach Convention Center, where security is very, very tight there. When we arrived this afternoon, workers were installing about a 10-foot-high fence around the entire complex. Barricades are in place, and some of the streets are actually closed. As for the campaign trail, the former president started his final day in the battleground state of North Carolina, promising to close the southern border and hold Mexico responsible.
If they don't stop this onslaught of criminals and drugs coming into our country, I'm going to immediately impose a 25% tariff on everything they send in to the United States of America. If that doesn't work, I'll make it 50. And if that doesn't work, I'll make it 75 for the tough guys, and I'll make it 100. Then I'll make it 100.
Meanwhile, his running mate, Senator J.D. Vance, was firing up supporters in Wisconsin, which President Biden narrowly won in 2020.
When Donald J. Trump was president, inflation was at 1.5%. When Donald J. Trump was president, wages were fast rising at the fastest rate in 40 years in the United States of America. When Donald Trump was president, the border was secure and the world was at peace. That's a hell of a record.
Carolyn Lovett, the Trump campaign's national press secretary, tells me the two are not taking anything for granted and are hitting the battleground states hard.
He'll close out this historic campaign in Michigan, just like he did in 2016 and 2020, bringing his closing argument to as many voters as possible in these battleground states. And the closing argument is simple. Kamala Harris broke it and Donald Trump will fix it.
She adds election security is a top priority.
It's our goal to protect the integrity of tomorrow's election for all Pennsylvanians and all Americans, regardless if they identify as Republican or Democrat. It's the Republican National Committee and President Trump's goal to ensure a safe and secure election.
Both sides continue to say that this is the most important election of our lifetimes. Now, when I did land here in Florida, I did speak to a number of Republican strategists who are not only predicting a red wave victory, they say that they're not only going to win the executive branch, but also both the House and the Senate, similar to what happened in the 1980s between Ronald Reagan and then Jimmy Carter. But time will tell. We'll find out tomorrow. In West Palm Beach, Florida, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
More than half the ballots for this election have already been cast in what is expected to be a photo finish in a couple of battleground states. Sad more. Let's bring in Jeff Paley, editor-in-chief of Ballotpedia, to discuss voter turnout and emerging trends. Jeff, good to have you on the show. Early voting in this election has already surpassed 2016 and 2020 numbers. Let's talk more about that and what is driving early voter turnout, and are these numbers what you expected?
Yeah, good evening, Tracy, and thanks for having me on the show. Early voting saw certainly a huge uptick in 2020, which, you know, none of us were surprised by with, you know, COVID and with the policies that were put forth by states, but it's really hung around this cycle. So, you know, people kind of forget in 2000, the number of early votes was just 14% of total votes. We're probably looking at, like, we'll probably eclipse 50% of the overall vote will have come in early, depending, of course, on how many people show up tomorrow. So, yeah, there's a lot more people that are voting early and, you know, probably coincidentally just because it's a lot more convenient. You can plan ahead. So remains to be seen what that will mean for future cycles ahead.
Yeah, I want to talk about polls now. I mean, many of the major polls have Vice President Harris and former President Trump basically neck and neck in the battleground states, obviously indicating an extremely tight race. But is there one particular group of voters that you think highly favors one candidate over the other? And could that group make a difference in this race, do you think?
Yeah, there's been a lot of polling, of course. And if anyone wanted to read all of the polls, they could have a lot of fun trying to figure out which groups were behind which candidates. You know, there's been certainly a lot of talk about male voters for Trump or, you know, female voters and, you know, stay-at-home moms, wives, everything like that for Kamala Harris. Really, it's probably all about turnout. Turnout in this country is still around, you know, 50-60%. Which means both candidates run their campaigns trying to get out their vote as much as they can. And we've really seen that over the last few weeks. It's less about trying to convince the undecided voters, and it's more about trying to convince your base, your supporters, to come out in higher numbers than your opponent.
Yeah, Jeff, let me ask you this question. I mean, do you think it's possible that the polling results aren't really truly indicative of this presidential race? I mean, that's something that we saw back in 2016 between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean, the polls are certainly very close. It's closer than any time since 2000. The last election that was this close in the polls right before the election was in 2012, the Obama-Romney campaign. It was 0.7 was Obama's lead right up until the election. In 2004, Bush had a 1.5-point lead before the general election. So polls have been close before like this, but, you know, it's certainly going to be a really close race, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Before I let you go, any final thoughts?
Yeah. So early voting is certainly up, and we'll have a lot of fun looking over the ballot measure results over the next few days. There's been more than $1 billion put into ballot measure campaigns this cycle, which is often a sort of undercovered part of the electoral process and plays a really big part in sort of ginning up interest around the ballot. So we're very eager at Ballotpedia to see what happens with those ballot measures, and I'm sure we'll be back to talk more about that this week.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you so much for weighing in. We appreciate it.
Sure, thank you.
All right, now to the Middle East, where Israel has ended the agreement legally recognizing the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. Israel accuses the agency of being infiltrated by the terror group Hamas, an allegation that UNRWA denies. This comes as Israel intensifies strikes against Hezbollah in Lebanon, expanding beyond just the border areas. In response, the Lebanese health ministry says that since the conflict began last October, the death toll in Lebanon now exceeds 3,000 people. And now to Spain, still in recovery from the deadliest natural disaster in living memory. Amid a visit from the king and queen to the epicenter, frustrated survivors showered them with mud and rocks. The king and queen were there to discuss the recovery with the country's prime minister. It has been 4 days since a tsunami-like floods swept through the southern outskirts of Valencia. Authorities have recovered more than 215 bodies and are still searching for more. Back here in the United States, Quincy Jones, musician, composer, producer, and recording artist whose career spanned decades, has died at the age of 91 years old. His publicist said that Jones passed away peacefully on Sunday night, surrounded by his family. Jones leaves behind a vast legacy of his work. He is probably known best as the producer of Michael Jackson's Thriller album. He also collaborated with stars such as Stevie Wonder, Frank Sinatra, and Ray Charles. His list of honors includes multiple Grammys, an Emmy, and a humanitarian award at the Oscars. That, and we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including it's a big issue, abortion. Voter views on it could decide who becomes the next president. We'll look at where the candidates stand on it. And a look at the role the Supreme Court could play in this election. It is the first election since the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. But will abortion play a key role in who sits in the White House next? Catherine Haydrow gives us a look at the presidential candidates and their stances on abortion.
The fundamental freedom of a woman to make decisions about her own body.
IVF, fertilization. I'm like the father. I consider myself to be the father of fertilization.
In the race for the White House, the pro-life movement has lost the little ground it had. The Democratic Party has fully embraced abortion with no limits on gestation. And the Republican Party is slowly stepping away from protecting life.
We'll stop Donald Trump's extreme abortion bans because we trust women to make decisions about their own body and not have their government tell them what to do.
Harris has extensively reiterated the narrative of choice and freedom used by pro-abortionists during her pro-abortion tour across the U.S. as vice president. She is the first sitting vice president to visit an abortion facility. As the Democratic presidential candidate, she made it the center of her campaign, vowing she would federally protect abortion as a so-called right.
And I pledge to you, when Congress passes a bill to put back in place the protections of Roe v. Wade, as president of the United States, I will proudly sign it into law.
During an interview with Wisconsin Public Radio, Harris floated the idea of ending Senate filibusters to pass so-called abortion's rights legislation. The filibuster rule sets a 60-vote threshold in the Senate to advance legislation. Harris wants a simple majority of 51 votes. She even brought religion into her argument in supporting abortion during her national debate against Trump.
And one does not have to abandon their faith or deeply held beliefs to agree. The government, and Donald Trump certainly, should not be telling a woman what to do with her body.
Former President Donald Trump has waffled on the issue as far as his own personal vote. He initially said he'd vote in favor of Amendment 4 in Florida, which would expand the abortion window to 15 weeks, saying he thought women needed more than 6 weeks. But after some backlash, he officially pledged to vote no on the radical measure. His stance nationally is to leave it to the states.
As far as the abortion ban, no, I'm not in favor of abortion ban, but it doesn't matter because this issue has now been taken over by the states.
President Trump has also pledged to support in vitro fertilization and promised voters to federally finance the procedures.
As part of our efforts to help working families, I'm announcing today in a major statement that under the Trump administration, your government will pay for or your insurance company will be mandated to pay for all costs associated with IVF treatment, fertilization for women, IVF treatment.
The running mates of each candidate, Senator J.D. Vance and Governor Tim Walz, have voiced varying levels of support for legalized abortion. Governor Walz removed born alive protections in his state of Minnesota.
How can we as a nation say that your life and your rights, as basic as the right to control your own body, is determined on geography?
I never supported a national ban. I did, during when I was running for Senate in 2022, talk about setting some minimum national standard. For example, we have a partial birth abortion ban in place in this country at the federal level. I don't think anybody's trying to get rid of that, or at least I hope not, though I know that Democrats have taken a very radical pro-abortion stance.
President Trump posted on social media during the debate, in part, that he would not support a federal ban on abortion. He added that he supports abortion for rape, incest, and for the life of the mother, and that he does not support late-term abortion. J.D. Vance, a Catholic, has claimed that a new Trump administration would defund Planned Parenthood, and during the debate voiced the need for pro-family policies.
As a Republican who proudly wants to protect innocent life in this country, who proudly wants to protect the vulnerable, is that my party, we've got to do so much better of a job at earning the American people's trust back. I want us to support fertility treatments. I want us to make it easier for moms to afford to have babies. I want it to make it easier for young families to afford a home so they can afford a place to raise that family. And I think there's so much that we can do on the public policy front just to give women more options. Let voters make these decisions. Let the individual states make their abortion policy.
Catherine Hadro, EWTN News Nightly.
And as mentioned, tomorrow is officially election day, but lawsuits, summer voting have already begun. According to one report, there have already been nearly 200 cases filed so far in U.S. courts. One of the biggest involves the state of Pennsylvania. The Supreme Court recently rejected an emergency plea by the state's Republicans. They were seeking to reject around 9,000 mail-in ballots that lacked a secrecy envelope, a signature, or a date. And for analysis, we turn now to Paul Clement, partner at Clement and Murphy Law Firm, and an attorney who has argued more than 100 cases before the Supreme Court. Paul, great to have you on the show with us. First, let's talk about the Pennsylvania case. The justices sided with the state Supreme Court in Pennsylvania regarding the mail-in ballots. Tell us more about that, and especially about Justice Alito's brief opinion on it.
Happy to, and great to be with you. The court pretty much unanimously rejected the request to get involved in that case. Justice Alito, joined by two other justices, wrote separately, just essentially to explain his vote and his belief that the court really wasn't in a position to give any relief in that case, given the posture of the case, namely that it came out of a challenge to the primary elections, not actually to the general election statewide.
Paul, the Supreme Court stayed on the sidelines after the 2020 election, refusing to hear appeals from the Trump campaign. Over the last year, the nation's highest court has had some influence, reversing a decision by the Colorado Supreme Court to remove Trump from the primary election ballot and then giving broad immunity to the presidency. Do you think the Supreme Court will be involved in any other cases this election season?
So I think the court is going to stay out of this election if at all possible. Now, it may not be possible. Many of the viewers will remember the 2000 election, where the Supreme Court did get involved essentially with two decisions, culminating in the Bush v. Gore case. So it's possible, but I think the court is going to do everything it can to stay on the sidelines once again.
Yeah, and remind us again about what happened back in 2000 for those that may not remember.
So the state courts, essentially in the Supreme Court's view, just made such a mess out of the voting and the counting of the votes, essentially changing the rules midway through the election and having different standards in different counties. And so first, the Supreme Court unanimously got involved in a forgotten case called Palm Beach County. And then the court ultimately intervened to say that the voting was proceeding in an impermissible way in Florida in the Bush v. Gore case.
And Paul, before I let you go quickly, what's the likelihood that you think that the Supreme Court will ultimately step in at some point this year?
I think it's unlikely. I think it would have to be a situation like Bush v. Gore, where it really comes down to the electoral votes in a single state being dispositive to the outcome of the election, and then there being some legal issue in the way that state is counting its votes. I think those would be the ingredients that would be necessary for the Supreme Court to even think seriously about getting involved.
Paul, thank you so much for coming on today and for your expertise. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, turn to the words of Christ. Learn why Pope Francis says the heart of the Christian faith is love. Plus, the Holy Father offers Mass for the cardinals and bishops who have died during the last 12 months. Appoints a new leader for the Archdiocese of Milwaukee. Auxiliary Bishop Jeffrey Grob currently serves in Chicago. He was born in Wisconsin and is the son of dairy farmers. He will replace Archbishop Jerome Listecki, who offered his resignation several months ago upon turning 75 years old. The Archdiocese of Milwaukee has around 550,000 Catholics. Pope Francis releases his prayer intention for the month of November, and he is asking that parents who have lost a child receive peace of heart from the spirit of consolation.
Decir a unos padres que han perdido un hijo.
The Holy Father invites the faithful to pray for all parents who have lost a child. He stressed that to offer comfort to these parents, we need to listen to them, to be close with them with love, and care for the pain they feel, imitating how Jesus Christ consoled those who needed it. Pope Francis reminds the faithful that when we feel lost, we can turn to the words of Christ and seek to love both God and our neighbor.
E ci chiederà anzitutto sull'amore, come ha chiamato.
During his Sunday address at the Vatican, the Holy Father says the heart of our faith is love, that loving God and those around us is an essential part of being a Christian. Pope Francis also says when the Lord comes again, he will ask us how much we love the people around us. Well, finally tonight, Pope Francis offers Mass for the cardinals and bishops who died over the past 12 months. The Holy Father invited us to reflect on the word remember, saying that our remembrance becomes a prayer of intercession for the seven cardinals and more than 120 bishops who died in the past year. The Pope also says that through Jesus we find mercy, and by turning to the heart of God, men and women of every age can find hope for salvation. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.